Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, we have a jam-packed show today for you. We'll be talking with Dr. Howell around 12:20, 25 about her search for hope and healing as her daughter battled cancer. She turned to a very controversial treatment, psychedelic healing, once popular in the 60s before it was banned. So we're going to learn about if that helped her daughter, how it helped her daughter, and why they turned to that for treatment. We'll end today's show with actor, activist, and triathlete Alexandra Paul. She's a former Baywatch star, but she's appeared in over 75 movies since then and has spent a lifetime making a difference to the environment, voting rights, peace rights. She's also been arrested more than a dozen times in protests along the way. And she's been driving. This was amazing to me because I guess I didn't realize they were around that long, but she's been driving electric cars since 1990. First, we're going to begin the second week of August, the second week of our celebration, 4 years on air of Conversations Live, with Tosca Reno. She says, yes, summer's almost out, but it's still not too late to lose 10 pounds before the end of summer. Tosca Reno returns today to tell us how. She's a New York Times bestselling author. She's just launched her 12th book, The Eat Clean, Stripped, Peel Off Those Last 10 Pounds. And she's appeared on Good Morning America, Good Morning America Health, The Doctors, Fox and Friends. She's a life changer on Extra TV. And Tosca Reno, I want to welcome you back to the show today.
It's such a pleasure to be with you again. So grateful that you asked me.
Well, this, I have to say, I went right through this book, and I think this is one of the best books that I've seen on eating. I know you're the Eat Clean Queen, but I loved this book.
Thank you.
Before we get into this, let's, for anybody who didn't hear you last time or isn't familiar with your work,
yes,
I just want to share with them very quickly that you were just like many other people out there. You were miserable being overweight. You were out of shape. You felt unfulfilled. And just tell us what happened.
Absolutely. I have definitely been in the trenches, that fat girl. I was on the couch, not moving. My health was poor. I was eating gallons of ice cream, tubs of peanut butter, all the wrong stuff in all the wrong quantities. And I got myself to a point where I was beginning to experience heart palpitations. My father died of heart disease. I also had reactive hypoglycemia, so I was heading into very serious blood sugar dysregulation issues, and I was depressed, leading a very illustrious, let's just say, a very unpleasant life. And, you know, one day I woke up at the age of 39 and I said, I can't do this anymore. At my heaviest, I weighed 204 pounds, so I was carrying 75 pounds of extra, well, let's just call it what it is, fat on my body.
Right.
And, you know, this was not a way to live. And I had, at the time, I had three daughters. Now I have four. Three daughters who, they deserved better than what they were getting. And I knew that if I didn't make some changes, I wouldn't be around long enough to see them live their lives, get married, have children, be productive young women. And it scared me. It scared me straight.
Mm-hmm.
So I did what most people do. I laced up my running shoes, and I began to run. And running was part of the answer. That's the movement thing. We need to move. We need to move that body. And I wasn't doing that. I was on the couch, as I said. But what I also needed to do was a little fine point that had eluded me, and that was change what I was eating. And when I learned how to eat clean, that is when my body went from Volkswagen to Mercedes-Benz. It was just a
I love it. I want to be a Mercedes.
Yeah, exactly. It just went to, we took it to a different level, and it was spectacular, even for myself to experience these changes as quickly as I did. And I was still eating plenty. That's what the shock was to me.
Right.
I was eating clean. That means I was eating more, and I was weighing less. It didn't make sense, but it worked, and I loved it. And by goodness, I stayed with it. And now, 12 years later, I'm 52 years old, and I'm getting ready to shoot my next magazine cover. And this is, I couldn't have predicted it. I couldn't have dreamed it. couldn't have imagined it, but it's happening.
And as I said on the last show, legs to die for.
My legs, yeah.
Well, they certainly look good on the book, I'm telling you that. I mean,
those are my legs.
I think that's an area that many women struggle with as they get older.
Yes, I think you're right.
The book is called, this is your 12th book, and you have sold over 1 million copies of the Eat Clean Diet books. This is called the Eat Clean Diet Stripped. What do you mean? Tell us.
Well, I heard so many women at seminars and workshops and appearances say to me, Tosca, I just can't figure it out. I need to lose those last 10 pounds. What is it about those and how can I get them off? And I heard that story so many times, I thought, you know, there's got to be a book that's tailored directly for that woman who's in that position, who wants to lose 10 pounds and to get it off once and for all. And that's where the Eat Clean Diet Stripped came from. And it's true. You do have to do some things differently with those last 10 pounds because they are stubborn. They like to hang around. Biologically, we're probably programmed to hold on to that a little bit, especially if you're a woman. And also, we've done some bad things to ourselves, sort of cumulatively and also indirectly, by consuming a lot of, and maybe far too many is the right word, refined foods, sugars, flours, processed foods, toxins, and so on. It shocked me to learn that fat is actually something that the body creates as a safe place to store toxins.
Mm-hmm.
That surprises me. So, you know, now we have to look at this body and say, hey, wait a minute, these last 10 pounds have got to go. Let's get them off. Let's do it this way. And you really do have to become ever vigilant about that sugar content and the pasta and the sizes of your portions. And then your body, you have to trick it out of its little reverie of, oh, no, I'm going to hold on to these. This metabolism is going to stop right here. That now you have to say, wait a minute, guys, I am going to blast this food away. I'm going to blast these extra calories away. Here's how I'm going to do it. And that means you have to stimulate that, you know, it's something that's innate in all of us, which is the metabolism. It's our own fat-burning mechanism. And you have to do that with a little bit of stealth. You have to get wise. And with your exercises, you have to, you know, moving around is not good enough if you're trying to lose those last 10 pounds. You've got to kick it up a notch. You've got to vary the workouts.
Got to use those big muscles, right?
You got to use the big muscles. They are what are called metabolic catalysts. So when you exercise the glutes and the quads and the abdominal core, I call it the AAA assault, and I can't repeat it on. But the AAA assault guarantees that your metabolism will burn 50% higher for a good several hours after you do the exercise with those muscle groups. So to me, I mean, I want that advantage. I want every advantage when I'm trying to lose those last 10 pounds because they can get a little stubborn. You know, they want to hang around.
Yeah, definitely. And the whole principle behind Eat Clean is obviously eating clean. I mean, so anybody can adopt this, but, you know, you, as you said, this book is for those who really looking to lose that last 10 pounds. And I just wanted to share a couple of the few of the principles with our listeners. Eat more, eat 6 meals each day. I know when I do that, the weight falls off me. So
it doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't make sense why I stopped doing it. That's what doesn't make sense.
That's good. That's funny. Go
ahead.
Sorry. Well, that's your metabolism responding. That's exactly what's happening. Those small injections of clean fuel are what is stimulating that metabolism to go into high gear.
Very good. And eat breakfast every day within an hour of rising. If, you know, a lot of us don't like to eat breakfast. I haven't eaten breakfast since I was a teenager. But I find I can swallow a shake, even if I can't eat breakfast.
And you're right to do so, because what you're doing with that meal, even that shake, is you're introducing, almost setting the bar or the tone for the rest of the day nutritionally for your body. First of all, you're waking up that metabolism. Okay, time to get going. Let's burn those calories. It's also an opportunity to give your body that much-needed nutrition, and all the cells will respond by working better if you do that. So the results are just, you know, you can't lose when you eat breakfast. There's some astronomical number out there, like if you eat breakfast, if you skip breakfast, you're 400 times more likely to be overweight or obese.
Wow.
And, you know, that's just such a big number that you can't ignore the importance of breakfast, in my mind.
Right, right, definitely. Another thing that I think is a lot of people cut fat down to the extreme, and I was very guilty of this until I took a nutrition class, and my teacher said, no wonder you're dragging your butt around. Mm-hmm. You're not getting enough energy. So talk to us a little bit about the importance of eating enough healthy fats.
Right. So there's fat and there's fat, of course. And, mm-hmm. you know, as in all things, there's an extreme and a very poor quality fat. And what you want is healthy, quality, saturated, polyunsaturated, and monounsaturated fats. Well, what does that mean? That means that you're going to be looking for the best quality fat possible, and your diet really should be something like 12 to 30% of your daily intake should be these fats. The fats can come in the form of very good quality olive oil. It's not enough to say extra virgin because you want to be sure it's cold pressed. A good olive oil tingles on the tongue, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yep. You can get also healthy fats from nuts and seeds. Make sure that they're raw, unprocessed, unroasted, unsalted, and no junk on them, just nice, clean nuts. Some people like to soak their nuts to get rid of the phytic acid, and that makes them much more nutritious for the body. I also like the idea of full-fat Greek yogurt or raw organic butter. That is also good for you. And even fats from your free-range cattle who eat grass, not corn and soy, not concentrated feedlot animals, fats from eggs even. The cholesterol that is in an egg, and let's hope it's a range-free, happy hen, but the cholesterol is one of the most important building blocks for all of your hormones and cells in the body. It's like the master fat from which all things are made. So, you know, the fact that we've avoided fat in this country has landed us in a very strange position where there's a prediction that in the year, around about the year 2050, it will be the odd couple who will be fertile enough to generate a baby. We're having so many problems already.
Wow.
But it's going to get worse.
That's interesting. And that kind of ties into our third guest today. We're going to talk about population.
It'll be interesting.
But, we don't have too much time here, and I want to ask you, because a lot of people, when they change their diet, they do start eating healthy, they get what you call, you know, cut the crud hangover.
Right.
Your body's detoxing, and you're dealing with all this rubbish which you've put in for weeks.
Yeah.
And you have a great list of 10 ways to deal with it, and one of them I was interested to read was to increase your fiber intake.
Yes, absolutely. Wow, where do we begin with this? All right, so the body has its own capability to detoxify itself. It's something that happens when we sleep at night. However, when we can't eliminate properly, and that means our bowels, when we can't empty the colon and we can't digest these foods, toxins linger and they tend to embed themselves in the wrong places. So when we can't eliminate this most basic of waste from the body, it tends to reintroduce itself back into the body via that very delicate lining of the colon, and that causes a lot of problems. So fiber is something that helps us to not only cleanse the colon, but things will attach to that fiber on the way out, on the journey out. And you can lose as much as 12 pounds of simply just, you know, built up feces in the colon.
Wow.
Which is a wonderful way to lose weight if it's just that, right? I mean, if it's just a simple matter of having some extra fiber and then sitting down on the job, this is good news. I'm trying to be delicate here.
Yes, I know.
but
we certainly don't want to keep that stuff inside of us.
No, absolutely. And the other, I think what's also critical is when we're beginning this cut the crap hangover thing and detoxing our body, let's make sure that the bladder is working properly. So that means plenty of water. Let's make sure that the skin is open so that we're sweating out, because skin is also a way of shedding toxins from the body. And so the colon, the lungs, the nostrils, the kidney, and the lymph, these are the ways that we get rid of waste in the body. And all those paths need to be well open and functioning. Otherwise, we're just releasing toxins and having them relocate themselves.
Wow.
That's not the way it needs to be.
Right. We're almost at the end of our segment, Tosca, but I want to ask you two things before we go today. I want to ask you one, let's bust one myth on one food that's supposed to help us lose weight but actually keeps the pounds on.
Okay.
Well, what would the number one be for you?
Oh, my gosh. Any food that says reduced fat, reduced calorie, or anything that says, you know, 100 calorie snack pack. What's happening here is that people think that they can eat so much of these foods because they're kind of, you know, calorie free, or there's such a minimal amount of calories that they'll lose weight by eating them. But what's happening instead is they're increasing their sugar intake indirectly. The refined flour, the processed carbohydrates, the sugar, what happens is the body takes those in and turns them into carbohydrate / fat and stores them as fat because we're just eating too many of them. So this is a big, you know, to me this is a big red flag. If I were a bull, I'd go charging right at it and past it, because anything that says reduced calorie, reduced fat, snack pack, you don't want to touch that stuff.
Got it.
Forget it.
Got it. And before you go, I want you to tell us about your exciting new television show.
Oh, right. Okay, so we have Tosca Flexing at 49. We shot the show a couple of years ago. It's on the Oprah Network. It's really fun. It's watching me get ready for a physique contest and put on a bikini and compete with the young 20-something.
Good for you.
And I guess another piece of news is that we're launching Just the Rules, which is a very easy, fun, fast read. You can learn more about it in Oxygen Magazine, the upcoming issue, September. But you can also go to YouTube and watch some fun clips. And basically, it's taking the Eat Clean Diet rules and making them simple, easy peasy for us to follow and have fun. So it's called the Eat Clean, or Tosca Reno Presents Just the Rules, and it's on YouTube. And it's lots of fun because I poke fun at myself, but I try to teach the message of taking care of yourself by eating clean.
Well, it sounds good, and I'm going to look out for it. And we can find out more about Tosca Reno at toscareno.com.
That's right.
And the book again is called The Eat Clean Diet Stripped. Peel off those last 10 pounds. There's everything in here you need to know, from organic, vegetarian, meat products, exercise, and there's even some great recipes at the back of the book. Tosca Reno, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you. What a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And remember, keep it tight and eat clean.
There we go. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Howell, who's going to share her journey with us. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
You listen to us? Now we want to hear from you. We're ready to listen as you tell us about yourself, the radio programs you love, and your likes and dislikes. All you have to do is log on to 1150kknw.com. That's 1150kknw.com, and fill out the 2011 Alternative Talk Listener Survey. As a thank you, you will be entered to win a trip for two to Victoria, BC, including transportation, lodging, and continental champagne breakfast. Log on to 1150kknw.com because we're listening. Contest rules and details online at 1150kknw.com.
Blogwell returns to Seattle August 9th and is offering listeners of Conversations Live a special 33% discount. Learn how big brands use social media to increase sales, drive web traffic, and raise awareness, and how you can apply the same methods to grow your business or career. Blogwell facilitator and consultant Andy Cernovitz is the go-to expert in word-of-mouth marketing. Reserve your seat today by signing up at socialmedia.org/blogwell and enter your discount code VickySentMe to save 33% off the registration price. See full details at socialmedia.org and remember your discount, VickySentMe. That's all one word, VickySentMe.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job, and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Get a grip on life with Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My next guest is Dr. Marilyn Howell. She was trained as a biologist. She earned a doctorate in education from Harvard University and taught at Brooklyn High School for 3 decades, where she developed the first mind-body course adopted in public education. She's also been a consultant for various special projects, such as developing educational materials that accompanied the PBS documentary Healing and the Mind with Bill Moyers. And she has a new book out called Honor Thy Daughter, A Family's Search for Hope and Healing. Dr. Marilyn Howell, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And I'm going to ask you just to speak up a little if you could, because
Certainly.
Thank you. Thanks. That's better. So I want to just point out you're a doctor of education, not a medical doctor, but you have been trained as a biologist and did a lot of research on your own on this topic.
Yes.
And the journey for this book really began with the death of your daughter, or before the death of your daughter. You had a wonderful 32-year-old daughter. Why don't you tell us what happened to her when she got sick?
She was initially misdiagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, and 7 months after she first went to doctors for severe abdominal pain, she happened to be visiting me after a vacation and began bleeding, went to the emergency room, finally had a colonoscopy, which diagnosed her, and then a surgery. And by that time, she had advanced colon cancer. So for the next 14 months, we went from trying to do everything we possibly could, all the traditional mainstream chemotherapy protocols and all the alternatives that she could squeeze in between without compromising those, all failed. And then pain management also failed. And when she was in hospice care, about 3 months from her death, I learned of one option that might alleviate her suffering. It was a study that I heard about at McLean, Harvard, studying anxiety and depression in end-stage cancer patients using MDMA, which is the scientific term for methylene dioxybutamphetamine ecstasy on the street, in the hopes that that could not only alleviate anxiety and depression, but also her physical pain. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that study was not ready to accept patients yet. But knowing that there was something that could alleviate my daughter's pain, I was willing to do anything. And I knew that there were underground therapists that had been working ever since the 70s, before the drug became illegal, that were so committed to using this assistance for therapy that they were willing to risk penalties. I did everything I could to find such a person, and did.
Mm.
And those experiences with psychedelic therapy at the end of her life were really the best things that happened. And at the very end, when a person in her condition basically had the choice between sedation, even terminal sedation, or constant chronic pain, she had the option to have a respite from that pain, to love life again, to have some beautiful experiences, and to die alert, aware, and in peace. So I became, part of my grieving process was writing the book about that experience, and the motivation was to let people know there was another option out there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest barriers is the prejudice about psychedelics in general. There was a 40-year moratorium on investigating their healing potential.
Right, because they were actually banned. Psychedelic psychotherapy was banned in the 60s, wasn't it? It was very popular in the 60s, and then it was banned.
And MDMA was a little bit later. In 1975, I believe it was when that occurred. So,
and people might think, you know, it's kind of strange you'd turn to that, but you were trained as a biologist, and in your younger days, you had taken many workshops and experimented and explored all kinds of healing and therapies.
Yes.
I'm curious what it actually did for your daughter, though. Did it it helped with her pain, as I understand it?
Yes. MDMA took away her pain.
And that's one of the most critical factors, isn't it, with without her being asleep all the time.
That's right. That's right. So it gave her another choice between basically being sedated or being awake and suffering.
Mm. So what do you want listeners really to take away from the book? I know that initially there was an article published, I think, in the Boston Globe about this a number of years ago, and at that point you wanted to be anonymous. Now you've written the book, now people know your name. Why did you choose not to stay anonymous? What do you want people to learn from this?
Okay, well, first of all, I was teaching in the public schools still, and I did not want to put the school system in the awkward position of having to either defend me or not defend me.
Right.
Now that I'm no longer a part of the school system, I was certainly willing to come out on my own, so that, for one thing, people could know the healing potential of this drug, so that the medical profession hasn't been educated on the potential of drugs since the 60s. They hear about the abuses, but they don't know anything about the healing potential in general, and therefore they tend not to recommend their patients for research. It's the hardest thing is to get subjects. So for people to know that when studies come out, there was one for psilocybin in end-of-life patients at UCLA, another one at Johns Hopkins. There are other psychedelics that also can be tremendously helpful. So it's to let people know that there are studies, that there's a shift now. Now the government agencies are looking at the science and not just the politics, and rejecting the possibility of even looking into the healing potential of these drugs.
Interesting. We're almost at the end of our segment, Dr. Halbert. I want to just, at the end of the book, your daughter says to you, "I feel my will slipping away. I don't want to give up, but I don't think I can fight the pain much longer." How does a mother cope with that?
Not easily. There certainly were times when I just wished that I could have gone with her, because it was so very hard. And to at that point, to have some time where she was out of pain meant everything, and was really the key, the seed of the gratitude that I could build back a life and dedicate the rest of my life to honoring her spirit and the information that her experience could provide to help others.
And I think you've done that in this book. Honor Thy Daughter is the name of the book. You can find out more about Marilyn Howell, the author of the book and my guest today, at honorthydaughter.com. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Marilyn?
I'd like to thank you for giving me this opportunity, and for the listeners for their open minds.
And we're sorry for your loss, and I hope you go on healing, and I know you're going to be helping other people through this.
Thank you so much.
Please stay with us when we come back. We're going to switch gears a little. We're going to talk with Alexandra Paul about what's not on our environmental to-do lists and maybe should be. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry feels forever.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's AndreaKay.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live, we're Vicki St. Clair. Dr. Deborah Mandel says that problems at work may stem from past relationships. She says your boss is not your mother and provides tools on how to survive and thrive in negative work environments. And if you can't do that, career expert Ford Myers tells how to put an end to dreaded Sunday night anxiety with tips and resources to finding a new job, even when no one's hiring. Tune in Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See guests and schedule details at conversationslive.net.
Get your smile on with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We are in our last segment today. Today is just flying by. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we just talked on somewhat of a controversial subject with Dr. Marilyn Howell. My next guest is going to broach on another controversial subject. And we're talking with Alexandra Paul. And as I said at the top of the hour, she is the former Baywatch star. She's an actor, activist, and triathlete. She's appeared in over 75 movies. If ever you've switched on Lifetime Movie Channel, you've seen Alexandra Paul, I know. And she spent a lifetime making a difference to environmental, voting, and peace issues. And along the way has got arrested more than a dozen times for standing up for what she believes in. Alexandra Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I want to just look a little bit at your background, Alexandra. I'm always interested, what drives people, where they've come from. And I know that you grew up in the country. You're known not just as an actor, but for your environmental activism, as I said earlier. But you grew up in the country. How did that influence where you are now today?
I think it influenced a lot because I look at the world now through an environmentalized, like when I see a car, other people might look at the design of it or wonder how fast it is. I only think of how does it affect the environment, how efficient is it. And I do that with pretty much everything. Like when I buy something in the grocery store, I obviously want to make sure it tastes good, but I also look at the packaging and I think where it's from. And so that's how I look at the world. It was because I grew up in the country and therefore was very close to nature. Once saw a postcard of a bird's eye view of the freeway system in Los Angeles and said, who the heck would ever want to live there? And now I've lived here for almost 30 years.
The answer is?
Me, I guess. But I also had a British mother who grew up during the World War II, and so she had very much of a conservationist mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It might not have been so environmentally based, more about you just don't waste, that
right.
was her ethic, but I saw it through environmental eyes. And so living more simply, saving, not wasting, that kind of thing has always been something I've lived my life by.
I can definitely relate to that. My grandparents went through two world wars, and so they did not throw anything away. It was saved for repurposing at some later date.
Right.
Now, you've been driving electric cars since 1990, which surprised me. I didn't realize how long they'd been around. And I know you've been featured in the documentary which is one of the top documentaries on Netflix about who killed the electric car. Talk to us a little bit about the electric car, because you actually drive a real electric car that you plug in.
Oh, as opposed to a hybrid?
Yeah.
Which also has a large battery. Well, all cars have batteries. You know, your car has a battery, whatever it is.
Right, right.
12-volt battery. Then the hybrid has a larger battery, which helps the gasoline motor. Usually gives the car more power, so it doesn't have to use gasoline for the power. The beauty of an actual plug-in car is that you can use batteries only, and you don't need gasoline. And then it's a matter of where you get your electricity, which dictates how clean the car is. But even a car that gets its electricity from, which is very rare, 100% coal, very rare in the United States, the grid is about 49% coal. And in California, we don't have any coal on our grid. But even a car that runs off 100% coal is still a little bit cleaner than a gasoline car. It is not dirtier. And it also has the advantages of not posing national security risks in terms of trying to get oil from countries who don't like us.
Right, and the cost on energy is a lot less, isn't it? I mean, the cost to the environment of the energy production, too.
Actually, both. The cost financially for me to drive on electricity cost me the equivalent of 82 cents a gallon. Of course, if we can, the best alternative is getting solar or wind to power your car, and then you have the lowest footprint for your car. And so, you know, the grid is getting cleaner, and that's so our electric cars will also be getting cleaner.
Now, I want to get to the heart of what you want to talk about today, because I know this is very near and dear to your heart. You're very passionate about it. I've heard you speak on this before. And that is, the world population's hitting 7 billion. You are very concerned about overpopulation. Say, we should be much more concerned about this. We should have this on our environmental to-do list, because overpopulation is a huge contributor to global warming. So talk to us a little bit about that, Alexandra.
I believe that human overpopulation is the number one environmental issue. And if you care about rainforest, if you care about global warming, clean water, quality of life, then you have to look at the number of people on the planet. Unfortunately, it's a very taboo subject. And so even the biggest, most powerful environmental organizations, even radical ones like Rainforest Action Network, are afraid to put in, for example, the top 10 things you can do that every organization has. They're afraid to write down, have fewer children, one or two children per couple. They feel like they might offend their donors. And so the reason I want to start talking about it is to let people know that stabilizing the world population is actually a gift for everybody, and it's a very positive thing, and it's going to cost less money than the wars that will come about from overcrowding or the environmental consequences that we're going to have to deal with. I'm 48 years old, and the world population has more than doubled in my lifetime, and I think that's a very, very scary stat, and we're set to we're hitting 7 billion this October, 2011. We add a billion people to the planet every 12 years.
Yeah, that's really scary. Now, you know, there's a lot of controversy around this for a number of reasons. One, people don't want the government telling them how many kids they can and can't have. Two, you know, it's a case of, well, what's going to be next? Are you going to tell us when we have to die? Because now we're living longer, which obviously is adding to the population program too. So what do you think is the number one thing that we need to be aware of to try and control our population without going to those extremes?
The population problem is a result of huge success by human beings in terms of medical care, quality of life. We're living longer. We have better food in a lot of ways, more food for a lot of the people, not everybody, though. So it's a result of being really successful. And with any success, there are consequences. And coercion is not the answer to stabilizing and lowering the world population. China, I think when people think of stabilizing world population, they think of the government having a one-child policy like China. China averted 300 million births and famine. So it's still a debatable question whether it was wise or not for them to have done that. I personally think it was the only thing they could have done, and in a communist country, it works quite well. But in a country like the United States, where we're such individualists, the government telling us how many kids we're going to have is not going to work. And in general, forcing people to do something they don't want, especially something so innate and biological and emotional, is not going to work. So population activists like myself, we do not support the government ordering its citizens how many children to have. What we do support is access to birth control, affordable birth control, and the proper birth control and education about it. And this means that the United States needs to put a lot more money into its birth control programs overseas and here in the United States, making insurance companies pay for it. Viagra has been paid for by insurance companies for years, but a lot of birth control is still not paid for.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, insurance companies are run by men. So, and traditionally, men all over the world have wanted more children than women. And this is what brings me to a second point, and why the population movement is actually a very positive one for everyone around the world, is that our major goal in terms of stabilizing and even lowering the world population needs to be empowering women. That is the fastest way to stabilize fertility. So when I say empower women, I mean making sure that young women go to school, because for every year that a female goes to school, she has fewer children, and she also spaces them out and thus has fewer children. She also has children later, therefore over a lifetime she'll have fewer children. An empowered woman is able to say to her husband, you know what, I think I want to use the birth control pill, or I think we need to use condoms. So that's also very important. An empowered woman means a society that has less machismo, therefore men will allow women to participate in family planning decisions. And since women tend to take care of the children, they choose to, they want smaller families. Even here in the United States, 40% of the births in the United States are either mistimed or unwanted. They're unintended pregnancies.
Yes, and our teenage, we won't even get onto our teenage pregnancies because that is out of control. We need to take a quick break. I'm going to continue this conversation with Alexandra Paul when we come back. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Deep in my heart, I abhor ya. Can't get food for the kid. Good God, we gonna rock on to Electric Avenue.
Listen to us? Now we want to hear from you. We're ready to listen as you tell us about yourself, the radio programs you love, and your likes and dislikes. All you have to do is log on to 1150kknw.com. That's 1150kknw.com, and fill out the 2011 Alternative Talk Listener Survey. As a thank you, you will be entered to win a trip for two to Victoria, BC, including transportation, lodging, and continental champagne breakfast. Log on to 1150kknw.com because we're listening. Contest rules and details online at 1150kknw.com.
Blogwell returns to Seattle August 9th and is offering listeners of Conversations Live a special 33% discount. Learn how big brands use social media to increase sales, drive web traffic, and raise awareness, and how you can apply the same methods to grow your business or career. Blogwell facilitator and consultant Andy Cernovitz is the go-to expert in word-of-mouth marketing. Reserve your seat today by signing up at socialmedia.org/blogwell and enter your discount code VickySentMe to save 33% off the registration price. See full details at socialmedia.org and remember your discount, VickySentMe. That's all one word, VickySentMe.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Conscious living for conscious people. Alternative Talk 1150.
Oh no! Oh no! Oh no! Patrick Avenue, and then we'll take it higher.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Alexandra Paul, actress and activist. And we were talking before the break about Alexandra's belief that we need to control the population. And one of the ways we do that is through planned pregnancy. I was saying to you in the break, Alexandra, you know, in England, when I grew up, there's so many teenage pregnancies over here that just, you know, we all know what happens to teenagers when they have babies. And there aren't too many really happy stories about that. But, you know, when I grew up, we could just go to the family planning clinic once we were 16 and pick up free supplies and be educated about that. And I think that's invaluable because we just don't have anything like that here, as far as I'm aware.
Abortion and birth access to safe abortion and access to appropriate and affordable birth control is very important for stabilizing population. I want to use the word control, and when you say control population, it does put in mind someone forcing, and I want to reiterate that stabilizing the population is in the interest of everybody, and that our culture seems to encourage the idea of a big, happy family and that an only child is a lonely child. And what I'm trying to do by speaking out is to let people know that smaller families are also really happy, often happier, because there's more time that parents have to spend with their children. There's less money stress and more attention that each child can have. So culturally, I think it's really important that we change our mindset about how we look at families. And families like myself, which are child-free. My husband and I have chosen not to have children at all. We did consider adopting, but then decided that we were so happy with our lives that we were going to remain child-free. And I'm sorry, I digress a little bit because you started asking about access to birth control and abortion.
No, that's fine.
No country has been able to achieve replacement level fertility without access to safe abortion. That means that in some Catholic countries, women might have to travel somewhere, another country, to get abortions, but they still had access to them. It's really a tough issue, and I do respect people who feel that abortion is against their ethics. But that is just a hard fact. That we need to give women the choice. Otherwise, our numbers are going to grow too much. In places like Ethiopia, in some places, 70% of the hospital beds are filled with women who've had botched abortions.
Yeah,
so women who have unwanted pregnancies will try and get rid of them any way they can, and so this results in so much more pain and suffering.
Yeah, and obviously the best solution is to focus on education so that doesn't happen in the first place.
That's right. Birth control is really key. And as I said before, that means making sure that women are educated in school and empowered. And not just educated about birth control, although that's very important too. And men need to be educated about birth control too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Now, the interesting thing is that, yes, exactly. I actually wrote a piece.
It should not be a woman's problem. It should be a joint situation there. But, yeah, women do need to be empowered by that.
I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post about the fact that throughout my entire sexual life as an adult, I was the one who always took responsibility for the birth control in all my relationships with my boyfriend, even though I had wonderful boyfriends. It's just that I was always the one that, you know, I bought the pills. They didn't even know what the heck was going on.
Right.
You know, I had to take care of it.
Right.
So luckily my husband now, he has had a vasectomy, which is another way of actually a really wonderful way to make sure that you plan your family. And we've made sure that since we've chosen not to have children, we don't have to worry about birth control, and it's great.
I read that your brother had a vasectomy when he was 21 because he was worried about world population, and your twin has not had children either. So I don't know how your mom feels about that, having no grandchildren. Because there's there's the struggle. There are people who genuinely want children, genuinely want grandchildren. And then we're really focusing, I think, a lot on unwanted and overpopulation.
I think that of people want children. It's a deep biological. It's what makes our species continue. And so people who want children, we want them to have children, but we just want people to understand that the world situation is so different now than it was even 200 years ago. 200 years ago, the world population hadn't even hit 1 billion. And so it took all the way from 200,000 years from when, you know, Homo sapiens walked this planet to get 1 billion people on the planet. And now we're adding that same number in 12 years.
Yeah, it's shocking.
It's like a steamroller. Yeah. And so what we need to do is change a little bit, try, it's hard, to change our biology, not let our biology run our decisions when it comes to family planning. If we want our children and grandchildren to have quality of life, then we have to agree that we need to have smaller families. And that means at most 2 children per couple. I recommend 1 child. And I think that grandparents, when our expectations are changed and our culture embraces a new way of looking at family, I think we can be just as happy with fewer children.
There you go. I know you want to tell us about Public Media, the site, so please do give that out so people can find out more information.
There's 2 wonderful organizations with whom I work. One is PopulationSpeakOut.org, where in February, to counteract the silence on population stabilization, people write and blog and talk about the population situation. And if you want to join that, go to PopulationSpeakOut.org, sign up, and in February, hopefully you will also post something or write something or spread the word. Secondly, Public Media Center is a terrific organization which is spreading the word, positive ways that we can stabilize the population around the world by producing radio shows in mostly impoverished countries, although now they're producing a television program for the United States, that although they're great soap operas, also include important messages that will help change cultures' views on family size, family planning, women's empowerment, and things like that.
Okay.
So, terrific organization.
And where can we find that, did you say?
Publicmedia.org.
Publicmedia.org. Alexandra Paul, great. You know, these are controversial subjects, but it's important for us to bring them to the table and talk about them. And I so appreciate you being with us today. I know you're doing great work out there. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Vicki.
And I liked the way that Alexandra ended the positive ways to stabilize the population. I think that's a good way of putting it. We're almost at the end of our show. We are celebrating our 4th year on air, and we wanted to end with a clip today. We're going to end with a clip from John Jacobson. He was talking about inspiration, discipline, and spontaneity, and trusting your instinct. And so we're going to end with a clip of that today. He's a Seattle filmmaker. And he's talking about writers and artists, but this applies to people in general. So we're going to leave you with that today.
It was fascinating.
They also talked about discipline and spontaneity being necessary, but you kind of think of those two things as being opposite. What did you take away about discipline and spontaneity and how they work in creativity?
Your question is so good. I teach a lot of acting, and I'm a theater director from background. I love to teach. And when you work with actors, a lot of young actors come in and think that acting is nothing but spontaneously being the character, like I feel like this, I feel happy, I feel this. But the truth is almost the opposite, is that you need great discipline to learn the craft and how to build a character and how to build a moment, how to analyze your material, to make decisions. And once you get good at that craft, which takes a lot of discipline, then that frees you to be in the moment, to be spontaneous. But if you and I did a scene right now, we would only be spontaneous as Vicki and John. We wouldn't be spontaneous as Willie Loman and his wife, because we don't know those characters. You have to do a tremendous amount of preparation in order for spontaneity to even appear to have any reality.
Interesting. Now, also, one of the comments that I found interesting was you asked, how do you develop style? And one of the answers was by our mistakes, through our mistakes. That's how we develop our own style. I wonder if you talk about that for a little.
Well, all of us, I mean, who is born, well, I guess some people are born truly geniuses, but most of us bumble through finding what our style is and finding what we like and finding what sells and finding what other people like. And you know, I'm saying to writers all the time that I work with, you need to get the critic out of your life because that critic is keeping you from writing. And I think that's true with all art. It does take a little arrogance, doesn't it, to be an artist? Because you have to sort of believe that you can make a movie when no one else thinks you can, or you can sell a painting when everybody else is saying artists make no money. It takes a little overbelief in yourself to see you through those hard times. But artists can't have a critic sitting in their own head saying your work stinks, because it'll just stop you from producing anything.
Right, right.